Happy Friday, everyone. I hope you are having a great weekend and that that weekend includes some plans to spend time with your brothers and sisters in Christ at your local congregation. If you don't have a home congregation, you need to go out and find one. Every last one of us need a place where we can worship and fellowship and praise and pray and serve and study and encourage to love and good deeds one another and have that happen to us. That's the point of having local congregations. So find yourself a place, get plugged in, stay plugged in. If you are actively looking for a place right now to call home, then come check us out at Elkhart East if you're within driving distance and see if maybe we could be that place for you. I want to also say a thank you to all of you who are supporting Into the Word financially to be on the radio station and also online. We appreciate that very much. We're going to open our Bibles today to 1 Kings chapter number 9, verse number 10. And we have a parallel that we should keep in mind over in 2 Chronicles chapter number 8 at verse number 1. So 1 Kings 9:10 starts with these words, at the end of 20 years. So that's 20 years since Solomon began his solo reign and began the building of the temple. So by my calculations, the 24th year of Solomon, which is 20 years since he became solo king, began in the fall of 958 BC. So, at the end of those 20 years, in which, or during which, Solomon had built the two houses, that is, the house of He Who Is, otherwise known as the temple or the palace of God, and the king's house. So, that's his own governmental complex, which we talked about last time. It includes the House of the Forest of Lebanon. It includes another meeting house, as well as the royal residence and throne room. So all of that has been completed in a 20-year span. So at the end of that, we are told, verse number 11, Hiram, king of Tyre, had supplied Solomon with cedar and cypress timber and gold as much as he desired. So during this entire construction phase, which is basically half of Solomon's solo reign, Hiram from the city of Tyre, a Phoenician country, has been providing him with the high-value lumber, as well as a lot of the blocks that needed to be quarried. And so King Solomon turns around and gave to Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. Now, he's already paid Hiram for a lot of the other work. This is like apparently a bonus sort of payment. And it's 20 cities that would have been on the border between the area of Israel and the Phoenician coastline. So think about an area in modern-day Galilee, south and a little bit east from Tyre. It's also, I guess, another way of describing it would be north and east from the Bay of Akko. Remember, when you look at the coastline of Israel, there's a little bump on the coastline. That's the termination point for the ridgeline we call Carmel. And then north of that is a bay. And that's the Bay of Haifa. And so, just a little bit to the northeast of there is where these 20 cities of Galilee on the border with Phoenicia were deeded over to Hiram. Now, verse 12, when Hiram, came from Tyre to see the cities that Solomon had given him, they did not please him. So he didn't like them. Therefore, he said, what kind of cities are these that you've given me, my brother? So they are called the land of Kabul to this day. Now, Kabul in the Hebrew language has the idea of binding or braided or edge or termination point. Some have tried to say that it has a symbolic meaning of worthless. I think, and this is just my guess based on the more specific meaning of Kabul in Hebrew, is that these cities were in the hill country of Galilee and were kind of braided in by the terrain. And so, therefore, they were not all that useful. They were kind of in little valleys bordered by hills and not easy to get in and out of. And so I think that's the reason that he says, no, I don't want those. They're worthless to me. Now, I have a personal interest in this because I was born and raised in southern Missouri in a place called Kabul. Now, we spelled it C-A-B-O-O-L. I more than likely it was named by a railroader that had been in Afghanistan and named it after the terrain of around the city of Kabul, K-A-B-U-L, and that's actually how we spelled our yearbook there at the high school. It would not be funny to us in our hometown to think that our town was worthless, okay? But here, Hiram just says, nah, not interested. Now, Solomon turns around and takes these cities back and rebuilds them. And it's mentioned in our parallel. 2 Chronicles chapter 8, verse 1, first says this, at the end of 20 years, in which Solomon had built the house of he who is and his own house, Solomon rebuilt the cities that Hiram had given to him and settled the people of Israel in them. So once Hiram turned them back over to Solomon, Solomon went, okay, fine, I'll rebuild them, make them better, and I'll put my own people in them. Back to our main text, 1 Kings 9:14. Hiram gave to, or sent to the king, 120 talents of gold. Now, why does he send these? There's no clear indication. It may be that it was just simply a gift at some point in their relationship. What's the value? Well, it's 4.5 tons of gold. So that's a lot of millions of dollars in modern day buying power. Verse 15. This is the account of the forced labor that King Solomon drafted to build the house of he who is and his own house. So not just the temple, but also the governmental complex. And the Milo seems to be the eastern edge of the palace complex of old Jerusalem. Now, I've been to Jerusalem a few times now, and when you go to what's referred to as the City of David Park, this is south of the Temple Mount. There's a big stone structure, as they say, in the north end of this park. And when I say park, it's an archaeological park. That was most likely David's palace when he was alive and reigning over Israel. On the east side of it, there is a terraced area that goes down into the Kidron Valley. And a lot of people think that's what this word Milo is applied to. that King Solomon looked at the situation there in ancient Jerusalem and said, I need to reinforce and rebuild the terraced area on the east side of the city of Jerusalem. And it says that he also built the wall of Jerusalem. And that makes sense because even though it doesn't specify it in all the details here, we know that Solomon extended the wall from the oval of the ancient city of Jerusalem northward to encompass all of his new building area, the Temple Mount, and his new palace complex. And so he builds that wall probably starting right around the Milo. So that may have been why he felt the necessity of redoing that terraced work. But he also built Hazor. That's up in the north, north of the Sea of Galilee. It became one of his major fortified cities. Been there, seen the walls that he built at this time. And Megiddo, same thing. It became one of his chariot force cities, overlooking the plain of Jezreel, in the breadbasket of the north part of Israel proper. And also Gezer. Now, Gezer is down toward the Philistine territory area, and this is why we get a little bit more detail on why Solomon was working with Gezer. It says, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up and captured Gezer and burned it with fire. And he had killed the Canaanites who lived in the city and had given it as a dowry to his daughter Solomon's wife. So Solomon rebuilt Gezer. So this was from earlier in Solomon's reign. Solomon had married a princess out of Egypt. It may be that David had arranged for this. And the dowry was a city in the Philistine area that the Pharaoh had control of. So he simply said, I'm giving this to my daughter, and she's part of the Solomonic kingdom now, so it becomes Solomon's territory, and he rebuilt it and filled it full of Israeli people. And then he also built Lower Beth Horon. We're told over in 2 Chronicles that he built Upper Beth Horon. These are on the road from the coast up toward Jerusalem. He also built Baalat, which is another name for Kiriath Jearim. The Baal that you see in the front of that is the Canaanite word for Lord, and it was borrowed in the Israeli kingdom period that we're looking at right now to be a stand-in for the name of God. And so because God's throne spent some time at this town, Kiriath Jearim, it became the Lord's town, hence Baalat. And then he also built Tamar in the wilderness in the land of Judah, which is down by the Dead Sea. There is a little issue in 2 Chronicles at this point because they spell Tamar as Tadmor. The scribes apparently changed one of the letters, and so that gets a little confusing to people. This is not Tadmor out in the Syrian desert. This is Tamor in the Judean wilderness next to the west side of the Dead Sea. And then verse 19, all the store cities that Solomon had, and the cities for his chariots, and the cities for his horsemen, and whatever Solomon desired to build in Jerusalem, and in Lebanon, and in all the land of his dominion. Now keep in mind that David handed over to King Solomon an extensive empire that stretched from the Dead Sea, excuse me, the Red Sea, down to the south of the Dead Sea, all the way up to the bend in the Euphrates, from the Mediterranean on the west, all the way to the empty quarter, the deep desert of Saudi Arabia nowadays. And so all of that David handed over to Solomon, and he has just solidified his control over it. And so he is building storage places to take care of his people, but also take care of his soldiers and his chariot forces and his horsemen, all up and down this empire. Verse number 20. All the people who were left of the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, who were not of the people of Israel. So these are all of the non-Israelis, many of them Canaanites, that had remained alive through all these years of Israeli history in the land. Their descendants who were left after them in the land, whom the people of Israel were unable to devote to destruction, or more specifically, refused to devote them to destruction. Remember, their instructions from God was, these folks have been involved in sin. They are to be run out of the country, executed if they try to stay. And the Israelis chose not to mess with it, even made deals with them, started intermarrying with them. And God said, fine, if you're going to be that way, then I'm not going to chase them out. And so that's why these folks are still around. They are descendants of those folks. Now, many of them are actually now worshipers of the true and living God. That seems to be the case. But they are still not counted as Israelis. And so Solomon does something here. He says, these Solomon drafted to be slaves. Now, it's not slaves in the same sense that the Israelis were slaves in Egypt. These people are basically, they're drafted, if you will, into an occupation. They still have their lives in their houses, in their homes, and things like that. And they're apparently being paid for the work that they do. But they were basically told, since you're not an Israeli, you have to do this sort of work. Which is the harder work. And there's a reason that Solomon does it. That's about to come up. So they remain to this day. Whoever's writing this part of 1 Kings, some prophet, says these guys are still in this sort of work to this very moment. But of the people of Israel, Solomon made no slaves. So he didn't put them in these draft labor positions. They were the soldiers, because Solomon has a standing army now. Originally, there was a militia with a small army under David, but now it's like a lot of Israelis are serving in the standing army. So they were his soldiers, they were his officials, his commanders, his captains, his chariot commanders, and his horsemen. And I need to emphasize once again at that last bit that the Israelis were warned way back in the time of Moses that when they did eventually get a king, the king was not supposed to multiply to himself wives, that's political marriages, or horses or chariots, that's military. They were supposed to depend completely upon God for the leadership of the Israeli people. And so Solomon is here in the middle of his kingdom, the middle of his time on the throne, violating some of these principles. And it's going to pay some bad dividends before we're done. We already know that. Verse 23, These were the chief officers who were over Solomon's work. 550 who had charge of the people who carried on the work. So that's 550 that are in charge of the draftees, the Canaanite or non-Israeli residents of the land who are basically told, you have to do this type of labor. You don't have a choice. Eventually, and again, I'm just kind of getting ahead of the story here, but it's important to understand. Eventually, Solomon will start doing this to ethnic Israelis. He will put them in forced work details. And that is really one of the contributing factors of the splitting of the kingdom. Verse 24. But Pharaoh's daughter went up from the city of David, that's the old city of Jerusalem, down to the south of the Temple Mount, to her own house that Solomon had built for her. So he had built a house for the Egyptian princess in the new section north of the ancient city of Jerusalem, but south of the Temple Mount. So somewhere in that area is going to be Pharaoh's daughter's palace, because she's not going to be living in Solomon's palace. One of the things that we always forget, or it seems to me anyway, is that in a lot of these stories of arranged marriages and such, the couples didn't live together. That's especially true when you've got multiple wives. They lived apart. They came together from time to time in order to carry out required actions between them as indicated in the marriage contract, as indicated in the treaty contract, but otherwise they lived separate lives. So she has her own palace now, and she's moved into it. Then we have a reminder here, he built the Milo. So there's a lot of construction activity going on to encompass this new section of the city of Jerusalem. Verse 25 starts telling us how Solomon settles into a routine. Before we do that, I think I want to go back over to 2 Chronicles as our parallel. My apologies. This is kind of hard when we've got multiple sources here to know exactly when to bring some of this in. So let's reread about Pharaoh's daughter from 2 Chronicles 8:11. Solomon brought Pharaoh's daughter up from the city of David to the house that he'd built for her. So that's to the north, and there's a little bit of altitude that is gained in her palace to the north. For he said, my wife shall not live in the house of David, king of Israel, for the places to which the ark of he who is have come are holy. Now, we talked about that before. When Solomon married this princess of Egypt and brought her to the old city of Jerusalem, he would not allow her to have a room or a suite of rooms in David's palace on the north side of the ancient city of Jerusalem, because the Ark of the Covenant was in that complex. And Solomon didn't want anyone but Israelis coming into that complex where the Ark of the Covenant was located. So he apparently assigned her quarters somewhere nearby in the ancient city of Jerusalem. But now that it's the palace of the queen, the princess from Egypt is finished, he moves her into her new residence. Now, verse 12 says, then Solomon offered up burnt offerings to he who is on the altar of he who is that had been built before the vestibule. Remember, the vestibule is about that tower at the front of the temple building. As the duty of each day required, offering according to the commandment of Moses for the Sabbaths and the new moons and the three annual feasts. So Solomon settles into participating in a regular worship schedule. So there are two public sacrifices every day, one that kicks off the morning, one that kind of wraps up the evening. Then there's special ones on the Sabbath day of each week. There's special ones on the first day of each month. Then we are reminded that there are special sacrifices that happen during the three mandatory feasts each year. And so they're named here. The Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Weeks, also known as Pentecost, and the Feast of Booths, or the Feast of Tabernacles. According to the ruling of David his father, he appointed the divisions of the priests for their service. Remember, there's, I think it's 1,000 priests that serve 1 week at a time. There's 24 courses, so they serve 1 week twice a year. And so they're rotating through there. And same thing with the Levites. And the gatekeepers in their divisions at each gate, for so David the man of God had commanded. So David's the one that designed how everything was supposed to flow, what the logistics were going to be. And so Solomon settles into that. Verse 15, and they did not turn aside from what the king had commanded the priests and the Levites concerning any matter and concerning the treasuries. The treasuries are the buildings in this new section of the Temple Mount and the palace complex where they keep the gold, the silver, the precious stones, all the materials of great value that weren't used already but may be needed in the future. And so the city of Jerusalem is extraordinarily wealthy. I mean, it is unbelievably prosperous. And we'll actually see some of that described as we continue. But for now, we're going to mark our place, and we'll get back into the Word of God next time He gives us the ability.